Siddhanta Goswami Maharaj Jagat Guru Sri Jai Mr. Pajra Paramahanta Bhagataya Astatara Shishimacha Bhakti Siddhanta Sarati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Jai Ananta Goti Vaishnavinda Jai Namachaya Shri Harirasa Thakur Jai Prenda Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adhati Gadara Shri Bhakti Gaur Bhakti Vinda Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopina Shama Kun Vara Kun Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Mathura Dham Ki Jai Shri Navadev Maya Pradham Ki Jai Shri Ganga Maya Ki Jai Jamuna Maya Ki Jai Tulsi Maharaja Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Shri Bhagavata Mahapuranam Ki Jai Gopremanam All Lord is the sum of the devotees All Lord is the sum of the devotees All Lord is the sum of the devotees All Lord is the Shri Guru and Shri Ramma All Lord Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 The fourth sign of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of God as Narayana, unto Narayana Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Shri Vyasadeva, the author. By regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome when in the heart becomes practically destroyed almost anew. In transcendental loving service unto the Lord, his praise of transcendental hymns comes into being established as a new local fact. So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 23, text number 40. Vaishnambhati
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 Surasena
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 Nandana
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 Pushpabhadrake
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 Manase
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 Chaitarati
Chaitarati
Chaitaratya
Chaitaratya
Cha
Ta
Cha
Ta
Sa
Sa
Ta
Ta
Same
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 Samaya
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 Sata
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 Vishrambhake Sarasane
Vishrambhake Sarasane
Vishrambhake Sarasane
Vishrambhake Sarasane
Nandana Pushpabhadrake
Nandana Pushpabhadrake
Nandana Pushpabhadrake
Nandana Pushpabhadrake
Manasa Chitra Ratye
Cha Manasa Chitra Ratye
Cha Manase Chaitra Rate Cha
Manase Chaitra Rate Cha
Sarame Ramaya Rata
Sarame Ramaya Rata
Sarame Ramaya Rata
Sarame Ramaya Rata
Vishrambhake Sarasane
Vishrambhake Sarasane
Vishrambhake Sarasane
Vishrambhake Sarasane
Nandana Pushpabhadrake
Nandana Pushpabhadrake
Nandana Pushpabhadrake
Nandana Pushpabhadrake
Manasa Chaitrarati
Cha Manasa Chaitrarati
Cha Manasa Chaitrarati
Cha Manasa Chaitrarati
Cha Sarame Ramaya Rata
Sarame Ramaya Rata
Sarame Ramaya Rata
Sarame Ramaya Rata
Vishrambhake केसरासाने
विश्वाम्बा केसरासाने
नंदना पुष्पभद्रके
नंदना पुष्पभद्रके
मानस चैतरत जगरत्येच
मानस चैतरत्येच
सारमे रमय रता
सारमे रमय रता
कृष्ण पके सरासाने
ईश्वर पके सरासाने
नंदने पुष्पतत्के
नंदने पुष्पतत्के
मनसे चेतरत्येचा
मनसे चेतरत्येचा
सर्वे रमयारता
सर्वे रमयारता ईश्वर पके सरासाने
ईश्वर पके सरासाने
नंदा पुष्पाभगाके
नंदना पुष्पपात्रके मनसे चैतरत्ये च सर्वे रमया रता
सर्वे रमया रता
वैष्णवके सुरासाने
वैष्णवके सुरासाने
नंदने
पुष्पपात्रके
मनसे चैतरत्ये च
मनसे चैतरत्ये च
सर्वे रमया रता
सर्वे रमया रता
There is no purport to this verse, so we'll do the next verse and then I'll do the translation. Brajeshnunavimanena kamajena mahiyasa vaimanikan atyaseta chalokan kanila Brajeshnunavimanena kamajena mahiyasa Mahishyasa Vaimanikan Atyaseta Charalokam Yatinala Vrajasnuna Vimanina Kamajina Mahishyasa Vaimanikan Atyaseta Charalokam Yatinala Translations
Vaishambhake
In the Vaishambhaka garden.
Surasane.
In Surasana. Nandane. In Nandana.
Pushpabhadrake.
In Pushpabhadraka.
Manase.
Paramanasa Sarovara Lake. Chaturatye. In Chaturatya.
Enjoy.
Ramaya
by his wife.
Rata
satisfied.
Bhajishnuna
splendid.
Imanina with the airplane.
Kamajena,
which flew according to his desire.
Mahisasa,
with grace.
Vamanika,
the demigods in their airplanes.
Atiseta,
he surpassed.
Charan,
traveling.
Lokan,
through the planets. Gita,
like.
Anila, the air. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Satisfied by his wife, he enjoyed in the aerial mansion, not only on Mount Meru, but in different gardens known as Vaishambhaka, Surasana, Nandana, Pushpabhadraka, and Chaitaratya, and by the Manasa Sarovara Lake. He traveled in that way through the various planets as the air passes uncontrolled in every direction. Coursing through the air in that great and splendid aerial mansion, which could fly at his will, He surpassed even the demigods. Please repeat. Satisfied by his wife. He enjoyed in that aerial mansion. Not only on Mount Meru, but in different gardens. Known as Vaishambhaka, Sudasana, Nandana, Pushpa Bhadraka, and Jayaratya. And by the Manas of Sarovara Lake. He traveled in that way, through the various planets. As the air passes uncontrolled in every direction. Coursing through the air. In that great and splendid aerial mansion. Which could fly at his will. He surpassed even the demigods. Purpa Vashupapa. The planets occupied by the demigods are restricted in their own orbits. But Kadama Muni, by his yogic power, could travel all over the different directions of the universe without restriction. The living entities who are within the universe are called conditioned souls. That is, they are not free to move everywhere. We are inhabitants of this earthly globe. We cannot move freely to other planets. In the modern age, man is trying to go to other planets, but so far he has been unsuccessful. It is not possible to travel to any other planets, because by the laws of nature, even the demigods cannot move from one planet to another. But Kardamba Muni, by his yoga power, could surpass the strength of the demigods and travel in space in all directions. The comparison here is very suitable. The words yata and ila indicate that as the air is free to move everywhere without restriction, so Kardamba Muni unrestrictedly traveled in all directions of the universe. Satisfied by his wife, he enjoyed in the aerial mansion not only on Mount Meru, but in different gardens known as Vaishambhaka, Sudasana, Nandana, Pushpa Bhadraka, and Chairaratya, and by the Manasa Sarovara Lake. He traveled in that way through the various planets. As the air passes uncontrolled in every direction, coursing through the air in that great and splendid aerial mansion which could fly at his will, he surpassed even the demigods.
Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Chapatam Inam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dhatamayam Dhatati Pambatandikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Acharita Gadara Shiva Sri Guru Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So here the Bhagavatam is explaining the glories of Kadamba Muni. Kadamba Muni was a very powerful yogi, very powerful sage. And on account of his wonderful powers, mystical powers, he could do wonderful things. This is something which we all see, that powerful people can do powerful things. And not so powerful people can do not so powerful things, isn't it? So this is called what we call the quantity and the quality. Everything in the material world is basically gauged by the quantity and the quality. Every one of us, we have a certain quantity of power. This is called relative, according to each individual. We are relative to another person. And the universe is so vast that our power may be very tiny in comparison to other inhabitants. Just like if you're in a country, you may think that I'm very handsome or very wealthy. But then you may find someone who's much more wealthy, much more handsome, much more powerful. So therefore, in the material world, there is always competition for domination. Everybody is trying to dominate matter. To dominate, you need a certain amount of power, isn't it? Just like if I want to dominate you, I have to be either more intelligent or more wealthy or more strong, isn't it? I have to have something more than you've got. If I haven't got something more than you've got, how am I going to dominate you? And if I've got less than you've got, I'm definitely not going to dominate you. You're going to end up dominating me. So the material world is the law of the jungle, that might is right, isn't it? Might is right, and someone is more mighty. That's why everyone is very much attracted to might. If someone sees someone very powerful, just like if President Clinton walked in the room now, we will be attracted. Oh, Mr. Clinton has come for class, you see? But if some beggar walked in off the street looking for some scraps of bread, we wouldn't be so attracted. Probably chase him out, go away. So our concept, you're very tired today. You're very tired. Yeah. If you take, go and take rest, because class is about listening. If you're tired, then the bedroom is for tired. If class is for hearing. Prabhupada said, if you can't hear, don't come. So the thing is that the relativity of power is in the material world relative to our particular type of condition. We're all conditioned by various restrictions, just like this body is full of restrictions. We have limited eyesight, we have limited power of hearing, we have limited power of tasting something, feeling something, touching something. We have limited intelligence, limited mental ability. So our limitation restricts us. It restricts us. Just like if we see that all the different types of species, they're different types of abilities, but they're also different types of restrictions. Just like a particular insect can fly. Therefore, because he can fly, he can get out of situations where he's been attacked. Sometimes we see that a bird will come to attack an insect. If he's very fast, then he may get out of the situation. If he's not very fast, he's immediately captured because the bird is faster. See? So each particular type of body has particular type of qualities, but it also has particular type of restrictions. So if we study the particular types of bodies, we'll find that each body has a particular ability. It has a certain type of shakti, shakti-man. That the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the source of all shakti. The whole understanding of God is that he has unlimited energy. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Shyavasa Prabhava, that I am the power, Prabhava, I am the power behind this whole creation. All power that you see is coming from God. You see, just like the sun is reflected in many ponds and lakes, but actually the lakes, they are reflecting the sun. So every little individual living entity is actually reflecting in the sense that we are all part and parcel of God. So we have minute qualities of God. You see? So we are actually just like the drop of ocean. If you take a drop of the ocean, it has the qualities of the ocean, but not the quantity. The difference is in the quantity. You see? So quantitatively, we are much less. And therefore, we're automatically attracted to something of a greater quality. We're automatically attracted, like a magnet. If someone is very beautiful, just like if we see someone very beautiful, we're attracted. You see, even whether it's the opposite sex or not, the point is if they're very beautiful, we're attracted. This person is very beautiful. If they're very wealthy, we're automatically attracted. If they're very famous, if they're very strong, if they have a wonderful influence, if they have a demonstration, just like now, if I could demonstrate some mystic power, if I could produce some diamond or wealth, then automatically I would be attracted. Just like there's some yogis, they're able to produce ashes.
So Prabhupada, the ashes are not a big thing. You can get them in any fire, in any house, in any country in the world. You'll find some ashes. You see, they're not anything special. If you go like that and a load of ashes come out, so what? If you get a shovel of ashes and turn it upside down, so many ashes will come out. But the point is, because it is coming without my knowledge, I can't actually understand, oh, how is it coming out of his hand? So this is like magic, a certain type of magic. So people are attracted to that person and they call him God, you see? Because he can produce some contradiction to nature. Naturally, people don't have ashes coming out of their hand. So if I make ashes come out of here, the fact that billions of tons of ashes can come out of fires doesn't mean a thing. It's the fact that they come out of here. That's interesting. That's something different. So therefore we find that when something is contradictory to the laws of nature, not contradictory, but something is wonderful. Wonderful means something is wonderful when it is beyond our ability. When it's beyond our ability, just like for an ant. If an ant was studying, suppose there was a class now going on in the ant world, and they were studying the human world, you see, but they only had books. They couldn't see anything because it's another dimension. So they were all discussing, these human beings, you know, they can do wonderful things. And one ant is saying, what can they do? They can eat these mountains of food. For an ant, this is a big plate of food. It's like a mountain. Yes, it may take them half a day to climb over it, you see? So they can eat like that. So the other ants are going, oh, this is not possible. I've never seen any ant able to eat a big plate of food like you're describing. This is something wonderful. You're telling me fairy tales. So the other ant may become angry. Why are you saying that other ants can do that? No, no, they're not ants. There are different types. What do you mean different types? I haven't seen anything on the ants. You see? So it becomes very difficult for that ant to understand. So similarly with the human being, the humans are actually in a restricted species. Human form of life is actually degraded. According to the demigods and the higher species, we're in a very degraded life. So therefore the humans, they have certain abilities, and when they hear about these wonderful activities of the siddhas and the demigods and just like Kadama Muni, he could create a wonderful aerial mansion. Now that aerial mansion is described, as you've been reading, that it could travel over all the different pleasure gardens in the universe. Well, of course, we haven't gone to any pleasure gardens in the universe. So what are these pleasure gardens? Is it like Hyde Park or some park in London? Do they have waterfalls or a little of this or that? So it becomes very difficult to understand. So we can understand that actually within this universe there are so many different varieties. Actually the material universe is full of varieties, just like on this planet. There are so many areas that you've not gone into. If you dive deep into the ocean, there are mountains bigger than Everest. According to scientists, there are bigger mountains than Everest. We haven't seen them. So does that mean we don't believe? You see? So we can understand that even below the ocean, there are wonderful gardens and valleys, mountain regions. There are so many different varieties of life. But we haven't seen them. If you fly above the ocean for 1,000 years, you won't see a thing. Maybe a few flying fish, if they come out, you can see, oh look, there is something in there. But you can't actually see. You can only see when you enter into. You see, because your eyes are very limited. Therefore, what use is your seeing? Suppose you travel from the other end of the universe, billions and billions of years, and then finally you got to the Atlantic Ocean and you had these binoculars and you're looking into the ocean, sending reports back to the outer space. I'm here at last and I found it. What have you found? Oh, nothing. There's nothing here. You see? It's all lifeless. It's all empty. So then you fly back again. So the point is that what is the use of your seeing? Because we put very much emphasis on seeing. But even on this planet, there are so many things we can't see. So many varieties we are not able to see. So we should understand with intelligence that this particular type of environment that we are born into, as Krishna says in the Gita, that it is a certain type of conditioning. We are conditioned to think in a certain way, to behave in a certain way, to enjoy in a certain way. Ultimately, everything is based upon our ability to enjoy, our ability to dominate matter, to exploit matter, our ability to use matter for our service. So we have a very big restriction. Just like I know that wealth is very good for my sense gratification, but how much wealth can I get? You see? I can sit here philosophizing all day, but does that bring me any wealth? You see? To get wealth, I have to work, isn't it? Just like Gauraki probably would tell you. You may have very wonderful paintings, but you have to find someone who wants them. You see? You may have something that is very wonderful, but if you can't find someone who will exchange it for wealth, it's useless. It's just a piece of canvas with some paint spilled over it or something. It has no meaning. You see? So the point is that in the material world, if we want to enjoy, we have to work. We have to qualify. What is the meaning of work? Work means qualification. You see, you have to become qualified. Life is not cheap where you just come because you are, you say, because I am Arjuna God, therefore everyone should bring me wealth. See, you can stand on top of the hill and shout that out, but no one's going to bring you a penny. They might even charge you for standing on the hill or chase you away. So the point is that we should understand everything is based upon qualification. This idea that we can do anything and everything is simply a phantasmagoria. It is a phantasmagoria. Just like if you see Prabhupada's example in the purport, that they are saying that they can go to all these planets. Oh, we have been to Jupiter, we have been to Mars, we have been to Venus, we have been to the Moon. But all they brought back is some dust. You see? Some dust. So if someone said to you that I've been to America and I've been to Hawaii, I've been to Africa, I've been to this country, I've been to that country, I've been here, I've been there. And you said, well, what did you get in your pocket? And he pulled out some dust. You see? This is what I achieved. I got some dust. Would you be very impressed? In other words, okay, you've been there, but what was your achievement? What actually did you achieve from that journey? You may say, I saw some wonderful things. Oh, that's very interesting. But the achievement is that we have some dust or some rock. It's not very spectacular. Not very interesting. Just like even one newspaper reporter commented that. He said even the photographs are not that good. He said that when they take photographs of the earth, there's so many spectacular views. Have you ever seen photographs, aerial photographs of the earth? Beautiful colors and shapes and forms. He said, but they come back from all these planets, everything looks so blank and dead. Always gray looking. They don't even get anything which is very interesting, you know what I mean? It's like they all look the same photos even. So he was complaining that he personally didn't believe they go anywhere. he said he thinks the whole thing is just hype. So the point is that we have to decide if we want to accept modern science in all their wonderful explanations of the universe, that they went here, they went there, they saw this, they saw that. Ultimately, we can study, though, that every one of those scientists, even to get out of their own house, just to get to work, they have to go through so much hassle, isn't it? You get up in the morning, you got to shower, you got to wash your teeth, you got to get dressed, you got to get your breakfast, you got to get your car, you got to queue up in the traffic jams, you get into work, you get to your office, you're looking for your pen, who stole my piece of paper, who did this, that. You go through so much anxiety just so that they can go into work. Now, don't you think that it would be a bit of anxiety to go around the universe? Do you think it's so easy that you jump in a piece of metal and you just transfer it all over the universe? This is not the truth. Actually, Bhagavatam explained that in the orbit of a particular planet, the living entities on that planet cannot move beyond that orbit. They cannot go beyond it. It is a nonsense statement. You cannot go from the earth to another planet. It is not possible. The Bhagavatam clearly states it, that the living entities on the earth planet cannot move beyond the orbit of that planet. Unless they actually have mystic cities. They have to have mystic cities. The mystic cities are actually gain, just like in the case of Kadama Muni. He could travel because he actually had mystic cities. He could travel. He created a spaceship. But that spaceship was not like the modern spaceships, because it explains that he had a great time. You see? He wasn't in anxiety or exploding in space. He was actually traveling around with his wife, enjoying beautiful gardens, enjoying beautiful different types of pleasure. And that's only logical, because if there's not pleasures on different planets, then what is the use of the whole thing? What logical use is there to creating millions of planets if there's no pleasure? If you study this planet, if you go deep down into the ocean, or you travel across the land, or even if you go a certain degree up into the sky, you find what is the business? Enjoyment. Isn't it? You tell me anything that's not trying to enjoy. You show me one particular type of species that is not enjoying eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Now how is it that you go to other planets and you find nobody doing that? Isn't that very strange? Here's one planet. If you take, it's like taking a drop of the ocean, and you find that one drop of the ocean is full of salt and liquidity. And yet all the rest of the ocean has no salt or liquidity. Isn't that strange? Logically, does it make sense? That you have one planet where there are so many varieties of species all doing the same thing. Enjoying. Trying to enjoy. Struggling, yes, but trying to enjoy. And yet on all the other planets, the lights are out. Nothing's happening. There's no enjoyment, there's no sense gratification, there's no different forms of species, there's no trees, there's no flowers, there's no gardens, there's no waterfalls. So God must be a really, really out of it designer. Because it's like saying that Ford Motor Company could design one car, but then billions of others, they couldn't come up with anything. They couldn't go up with a steering wheel, or a door, or a wheel, or a shape of any form. They could just come up with it with a black piece of ash, you know, coming out of it. That's what it's like trying to say. That God, if you say that one particular planet is full of incredible variety, and all the other planets got it wrong, that means that you have to actually say, you're actually saying that God is pretty useless. You know, let's be honest, he's pretty useless, because anyone who could create something surely could get it right with a few of them. I mean, okay, you can understand it. If four of the planets that went to, one was good and three were bad. But the funny thing is every single planet they go to is useless. Isn't that pretty amazing? Now that can only tell you one thing. It could tell you, if you go somewhere, it's like I say to you, go to the Bank of England and break in there and you get into the big safe and you come out and you say, oh, there's nothing in it. And that tells me one thing, you didn't go there, isn't it? Because there's no way that you went to the Bank of England, into the main safe, and there was no money. So the easiest thing for someone, it's like, for instance, if I said to you that I'm going to go and take over the White House in America. Suppose I said to you, I'm going to go and take over the White House, okay? And then I come back a week later and say, oh, there's no one at home. It was all empty. Actually, not only that, there wasn't even any wallpaper on the walls. Carpet was all gone and all the furniture. There's nothing valuable. Because you'd say, well, what did you get? What happened? And if I came back with photos of an empty house, you see, and showed you, here, look, it was all empty. There was no wallpaper, no furniture. Everyone had gone. It was vacant. And then, that'd be okay with one White House, but if I said I went to like 20 White Houses and they were all empty, and nothing had further, nothing had anything, then you start to think, this guy's lying. So the point is that the idea that man can just jump in a piece of metal, put a bit of petrol in and go off the planet is a little bit far-fetched. Actually a lot more far-fetched than these explanations, because the Bhagavatam is explaining that the material universe is full of varieties. Variety is the spice of life. It's the mother of enjoyment. So how can you have a situation where there are no varieties? It is totally a preposterous explanation. The Bhagavatam is explaining that every single planet has got unlimited variety. It is explaining that on each planet, but those varieties and conditions are relative to the species that are on that planet. And other types, because it would completely contradict the law of karma. If anyone could just get up and go, suppose you decided that you were fed up with on the dole in Manchester and all the pollution in the atmosphere. You said, well, I'm going to take a hike. I'm going off to enjoy a little bit of heavenly planet there. I've had enough of this. So you zoom off in your little rocket, you land on the heavenly planet, and there's beautiful apsaras and music, and you're suddenly you can live for 10,000 years, and there's food that, when you smell the food, you faint in ecstasy. Don't you think everyone in Manchester would be off? You think you're the only one that would be going? Everyone would be going. So that would totally contradict the laws of karma. Because it would mean that actually you can transgress your karma by some mechanization. And that is not a fact. You cannot transgress your karma by mechanization, because we see that the more mechanized you become, the more you suffer. Even in this world, the more mechanized we become, the more anxiety, the more actual we think we're progressing, but we're not. So the point is that Bhagavatam is explaining that actually the material universe is not like the modern scientists are saying by their mental speculation, but actually it is full of varieties. And Kadarma Muni was able to enjoy even higher than the demigods. That he had greater powers, he was able to enjoy even greater than the demigods. So therefore we can understand how powerful Kadamba Muni is. And what is that power? It is you don't see where Kadamba Muni hired 400 engineers to build this mansion, and they needed so many screws and so many bolts, and someone brought a certain type of metal, and then they put it all together. Then they needed to go and ask Shell Company for some petrol, and they needed a certain type of petrol, and then they had to start the engines and the motors, and the whole thing started off. This is not actual, this is not very impressive, but Kadarma Muni could create from the mystical power of his mind. He could create from city. He had certain cities. There are 8 different types of cities. But they are actual creation. It was an aerial mansion created from his mystic power. So to mechanize things or to create things are 2 different things altogether. Because mechanization, mechanical apparatus, means endeavor. It means an endeavor. Just like if you put a car together, how much endeavor? How long has it taken us to actually develop the car, the motor car, the combustion engine? It's taken over many, 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 many years, isn't it? And it still can't fly. It can go very fast, but actually, ideally, you would want to get in your car and just take off. You see, and then you'd be able to go through an aerial path instead of getting stuck on the M1 in 3 hours of traffic. You could just, you see? So the point is that the fact that they're using mechanization, it's a mechanical system, and it shows a lack of intelligence. It shows a lack of power, because they don't have the power to actually create. You see, if you can create something, then that is real power. Real power means to create. Just like, for instance, that in God's creation, there is creation. Flower. You can't reproduce a flower. You can reproduce a plastic imitation of a flower, but you cannot reproduce a flower. You cannot reproduce food. You cannot reproduce gold. You see, you cannot reproduce, you can copy, you can imitate, but you cannot actually reproduce things which are created by God. But what we can do is you can imitate. Imitate means when there is some endeavor, just like, for instance, the material body. Material body is a creation. And Krishna says, Bijaham, that I am the seed-giving father. The body is coming from a seed. See? that original seed is impregnated by God. So Krishna impregnates the living entities into all the various types of situations within the material world. So we can understand that actual creation can only come from consciousness. Just like in your body. Your body is created because consciousness is impregnated into the womb through the sperm. And then it develops into a particular type. If the consciousness is not there in the sperm, then it cannot enter the womb, and neither can it grow within the womb, isn't it? And then when the child is born, if there is consciousness, then actually you can understand that this is a living thing. If there's no consciousness, then you throw it in the dustbin. Generally they have a rubbish disposal unit in the hospital where they take the dead bodies. That's what they do with abortions. They just throw them in dustbins. Now the same body is so valuable when it's got consciousness, but it becomes useless when it has no consciousness. Therefore creation comes from consciousness. You see? And who is the supreme consciousness? Krishna. Krishna is the supreme consciousness. Therefore he is the same supreme creator. Now we are also using consciousness to try to create, but we don't have the abilities to create. What we have is the ability to imitate. Most so-called creations are imitations. You see, just like a jumbo 747. You can build a big jumbo 747, but it won't go anywhere. It won't go anywhere until you add the consciousness. Until you actually have a conscious living pilot who goes in there and turns the key or presses the button. Nothing will happen in a million years with that jumbo. You understand? So that's not really a creation, it's a mechanization. Mechanization means to utilize matter in a specific sort of way. But that utilization is limited according to my conscious ability to utilize. You understand? This is what mechanization is all about. It's to develop the power to manipulate matter using our intelligence, using our mind and intelligence. You see? That is not creation. That is manipulation. There is a difference between creation and manipulation. We are not creators, we are manipulators. So therefore our abilities were limited. Whereas on a higher level, like in the example of Kodama Muni, he could create an aerial mansion from his mystic powers. You see? He didn't need to worry about getting a mortgage and getting this and getting a loan from the bank and putting together so many billions of dollars to create this mansion, and then wouldn't it work? I mean, wouldn't it be funny if he saw Gautama Muni's mansion took off and it collapsed into the ocean, and then he had to get a big crane to pull it out again and get it started again? You see, suppose that was the Bhagavatam story, that suddenly Gautama's mansion had a bit of problem in space, fell into the ocean, and he had to get all the cranes to come and pick it out, and then he found out that actually there was water in the engine and he had to clean it all out, and so many problems. It wouldn't be very impressive, even if it was a wonderful kind of mansion, because it would show that he didn't actually have control over the situation. He was a victim of the situation. So in the material world, the so-called mechanization just actually further goes to show that we are subjected by the material elements. That's why we have to manipulate them. Just like, for instance, if you're in a situation that you have to get out of, the fact that you get out of it, it may be very impressive. Just like, for instance, if someone is in a burning house or something and they manage to get out, then you come up and say, wow, that was wonderful, you managed to, how did you get out? Oh, I went through all these air vents and I managed to struggle and I got out. Wow, that's wonderful. But the point is that the fact that they need to get out is more important than their getting out. In other words, the fact that people need to manipulate matter means one thing, that they're being manipulated by matter. You see, if you study it with logic, the fact that we need to actually make adjustments in material energy means that we're being adjusted by material energy and we don't like it. You put on a sweater because you're cold, not because you love wearing sweaters, isn't it? It's not that mankind is thinking, wow, I wish I had a red, yellow, blue striped sweater. The colors come later. In other words, the need is to keep warm. So there may be so many varieties around that, but the fact is the need is actually to keep warm. That's making an adjustment because of some infliction. You've been inflicted with cold, so you make an adjustment. Similarly, if you study all the so-called modern advancement of society, they are adjustments. They're adjustments. For instance, television. You want to see what the just like they have the FA Cup. People want to see the FA Cup, but they can't see it. So what they do is they create a television, so now they can see it. But that does not mean that television is a creation. It's an adjustment because you want to see the football match. They don't want to see a television. They didn't create a television to see a television. They created a television to see the football match. So if your television doesn't work, then it's useless. Absolutely useless. You throw it away. Because you didn't create a television. You created a means by which you could do something which you can't do normally. That is called mechanization. Mechanically using matter to achieve a higher standard of sense gratification is not actually sense gratification. It's improvement, at best, isn't it? It's improving the situation, just like this house. This house may improve our standard of happiness in the material world, but that does not mean it is actually sense gratification. It's not actually sense gratification. It may increase our ability to enjoy within a limited, restricted situation. So, sense gratification can be seen by Kardama Muni. That is real sense gratification. Because he could create a wonderful arrangement without endeavor. You don't see anywhere where he endeavored to make this mansion and put together all sorts of pillars, and he had to get an architect to design it, and the guy blew it because he didn't quite get the building right, so it was lopsided, and then he had to call in another architect. You know, he didn't have any problems. So that's why the devotee, he is actually, if you read about these pastimes in the Bhagavatam, they are real pastimes. Because they're real, actual pastimes of control over matter. Just like Krishna's pastimes. What is the one dominating principle of Krishna's pastimes is that there's no actual limitation to them. There's no restriction. You don't see Krishna where he was really getting upset because he just couldn't get together that journey to the heavenly planets. He tried to get a ticket, but he couldn't get one. He went through all the great stages. No one could sort of set it up. Finally, he got a loan from Barclays Bank, and he got a ticket, and he went off. You see? So the point is that this is the actual Bhagavatam is revealing to us what is the real power behind the creation, and that is consciousness. Consciousness is the power behind creation. And all of these great sages and devotees, the reason that they can do these wonderful things is because they're Krishna conscious. You see? They're Krishna conscious. They've taken shelter of Krishna, and therefore Krishna empowers them. That is why the demigods are empowered, because they're devotees of Krishna. Therefore they have the power to control. Krishna is the only controller. And if you want to control, you need the blessings of Krishna. You see? That's why throughout the Bhagavad Gita Krishna is saying that I am the controller. You see? I am the controller. Nobody else in the history of mankind has ever claimed the sort of things that Krishna claims in the Bhagavad Gita. Nobody. Have you ever heard of anyone saying that I created the universe, that I control the sun and the moon and the stars, that I am the source of heat and light, and that I am the form behind all forms, that I am the seed behind creation, that I am the seed-giving father? Did you find anyone like that who could make these pretty extraordinary comments? So therefore we can understand that actually reason that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God is because when he came to this material world, he demonstrated. He demonstrated. All of his pastimes are full of wonderful stories. Now, because we can't do the same thing, we can dismiss them and say, oh, these are just fairy tales. Fairy tales. We can actually do these things. That is our choice. We can dismiss. But if we accept, then if we look at it logically, intelligently, we can understand that there is so much scientific reason behind these statements of the Bhagavatam. And if one is intelligent, he can understand that actually what is the real power behind matter? What is the real power behind matter? And that's logically understood because consciousness is the real power, just like in your body. Your body is being powered by consciousness, you see? And the quality of your body is also dependent on the quality of your consciousness, you see? That is what the 8,400,000 species, they're all different levels of consciousness. They're not different levels of bodies. The different states of consciousness, the evolution and devolution of consciousness is going on in so many different species. So therefore, the whole business of life is to develop our pure consciousness, is to actually realize that we are pure, conscious living entities, that we are, so therefore, there's no difference between self-realization and Krishna consciousness. Because until we understand we're different from the body, that we're actually consciousness, then we cannot know who we are. We will always be prone to be designated by our bodily identification, that I'm John, or I'm Paul, or I'm Ringo, or whatever. Isn't it? We'll always be thinking in those terms. And therefore, as long as we think in those terms, we will be restricted. Because we are restricted by the designation, false ego. Ahankara vimudatma, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, because of the false ego, we become an ass. You see? So until we get rid of the false ego, we can't get out of the ass mentality. We will have to remain ass, birth after birth after birth after birth. So therefore, why was Kadama Muni so powerful? Because he was free from this false ego. He was a great devotee of the Lord, pure devotee, and therefore he had wonderful powers. And even these great Vaishnava acharyas in our life, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says about Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami had all the eight cities in unlimited quantities. In unlimited quantity. Yet he did not even one time even think of using them. You see? Not even thought. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, what is the power of Raghunath Das that even though he was endowed with all of these Asta cities in unlimited quantity, he didn't even think of using them. So that is the power of Raghunath Das. Whereas most people are trying to utilize whatever is within their ability to use. Everyone is struggling to use whatever they've got. But these great Vaishnava devotees, although they have more than the powers of even great demigods, they don't even think of it. Why? Because they have Krishna. So therefore, to be Krishna conscious means to be more powerful. Powerful in the sense that Krishna is the all-powerful. Therefore, if you're the surrendered servant of Krishna, then you're greater than even all the demigods. Because the demigods are under the false idea that they are the controllers, that they are the power. So actually, if you surrender to Krishna, you become actually linked up with the unlimited. So therefore, when there's unlimited shelter, why should you worry about your limited ability? See, that is Krishna conscious. So therefore, Kardamba Muni was acting under the will of Krishna. He was not under the false ego that he wanted to show off his big aerial mansion. He was acting under the will of Krishna, and by his power of devotional service, he was able to travel throughout the universe, enjoying beautiful gardens, enjoy with his wife immense material sense gratification. But what did he do at the end of it all? Gave it all up. So the point is that the devotee demonstrates. He is demonstrating that even if you get all of this stuff, even if you can travel in the universe in a big celestial mansion with a beautiful woman and enjoy unlimited sense gratification, at the end of it all, He gave it up just like a person gives up stool. So no interest. So that's the point to understand. Not that how can I get a aerial mansion and travel around the universe as well. That's not the point of this story of Padma Muni. The point is that how can I give it all up? Because that's what he did after he did all that. So sometimes we want to travel here and travel there and see this and see that and do this and do that. But the point is, Padma Muni did even a lot more than that. And still he gave it up. Prabhupada said, I've traveled all over this planet, and frankly my advice is take sannyas. So therefore, ultimately, what is the story of Padma Muni is that he renounced all of this and he went back home, back to God. So is there any questions on this? Any questions? Points? Comments?
You mentioned that the benefit of the house is the servants of Krishna, and then later you mentioned that they were thinking they were the controller. So that seems to me like you think you're the controller, you're not actually taking charge of Krishna.
Yeah, well, the thing is with the demigods is that their service is the control. Their service is the control. So by nature, by association with controlling mood, they become contaminated. They are contaminated. But Prabhupada says that the difference between the heavenly planets and these earthly planets is that in the earthly planets we forget Krishna. The demigods don't actually so easily forget Krishna. So in other words, although there's higher forms of sense gratification and higher forms of enjoyment, but there's less chance of forgetting Krishna. In the sense that they actually, if you notice throughout the stories with the demigods, who do they always think of when they're in trouble? Vishnu. They always take shelter of Vishnu. So the point is that they are actually devotees of Vishnu. They're Vaishnavas. But by association with their job is to control, then naturally they get affected. They naturally get affected. But at the same time, they're not demons. Demons are those that forget God. So just like here, we also have controllers, but they're completely oblivious to God. They're completely forgotten God. As soon as they get a little bit of control, they think they're God. So that is not so prominent in the heavenly planets. They do become contaminated, but generally Prabhupada said the demigods are conscious that there is a higher controller. So even though they do get affected by this power that is there, just like Lord Brahma, when he was demonstrating how he was thinking, I'm Lord Brahma, same with Lord Indra, but at the same time, Krishna was there to chastise them. So they became a little humble. So Krishna has his different ways of awakening the living entities when they become puffed up. So in the heavenly planets, there are many different times when even Krishna comes and he fights with the demigods. He actually defeats them in battle. And then they become a little humble. But generally speaking, they don't so easily forget their relationship with God as in the lower planets. The lower planets, there's also a certain degree of heavenly sense gratification, but it's without any God consciousness. So sense gratification is not so much the problem, it's forgetfulness of God that's the problem. But generally sense gratification leads to forgetfulness of God. Therefore it's very dangerous. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam.
So why did he desire
this certain endurance? You see, Padma Muni actually, from my understanding of reading and from Prabhupada's certain explanations of it, basically Kadamba had no interest in traveling around in mansions or whatever. He felt sorry for his wife. You see, his wife rendered him some very wonderful service. And he wanted to please her. Prabhupada says, natural, a husband sometimes wants to please the wife. So therefore, He basically did what every householder should do. He satisfied his wife and took sannyas. That's what householder life is about. You have to, while you're living within the marriage ashram or the householder ashram, then there's certain obligations. You have to provide certain things, you have to adhere to certain principles of married life. So that's exactly what Kadama Muni did. But because he was such a powerful yogi, he did it on another dimension, on a whole different level, you see. He wasn't going down to the shop struggling to buy a new sari. He was able to show what he can really do. So therefore, on a different level, but at the same time, when it was all over, he took sannyas. So that means the fact that he was able to renounce it and prepare himself for going back to God, it means that he wasn't affected. You see? If he'd have been affected, he couldn't have done that. So, if you're not affected by something, then it's not such a dangerous thing. We cannot imitate Kadama Muni, but at the same time, even in the example of Lord Chaitanya, there were Pundarik Vijayanidhi, so many times, they were very big, materially very, very well situated. Ramananda Roy was like a prime minister, very wealthy. Rupa Goswami had huge amounts of wealth. Raghunadas Goswami, his father was multi-millionaire. So there are many examples of devotees that were very well situated in the material sense. But when it came to the crunch, when it came to the actual thing, they could give it up. That's a sign that actually one is not affected too much. If you're too much affected, you can't give it up. See, if you read that Kadama Muni spent the rest of his time traveling around his mansion, then he got another mansion, got another wife, then he had 15 mansions, and then you could start to think, well, hang on, maybe he's gone off the rails. But the fact that actually he was able to do all that, and at the end of it all, he was able to leave home, and the fact that his son was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we got to put it down to the fact that it was all done under the protection of Krishna's yoga maya energy. Otherwise, if it wasn't, then surely he would have been definitely baffled by the whole thing, because material energy is very powerful. So Krishna gave him the blessings. So the point is that sense gratification is not, actually sense gratification is natural. Prabhupada said it's natural to enjoy, it's natural to want to have a sex life, to get intoxicated, to eat very nice foodstuffs. These are natural, you see. But the point is that one has to understand that these are related to the body, you see. So therefore, it's not that when you read in the Bhagavatam, many times you read where great demigods or sages or whatever became implicated, but because they had this more powerful intelligence, when they, at a certain time, they could cut out. So if you're not that developed in Krishna consciousness, or your consciousness is not developed, then any kind of sense gratification is risky. You see? If you're not powerful. In other words, Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva could drink an ocean of poison. He said, one drop of that would kill you. So don't imitate Lord Shiva. But don't criticize Lord Shiva that he has 1 billion marijis running around in Kailash or whatever. You know, Lord Shiva, he's surrounded by beautiful women. But the point is that at the same time, he's the greatest Vaishnava. So we should not try to imitate these great personalities. Rather, we should, according to our own ability, we have to look after our own situation. In other words, because Kadama Muni was able to enjoy such wonderful material facilities, it doesn't mean that we have to try and imitate. We have to just accept that, yes, that's Kadama Muni. But then again, he was Kadama Muni, I'm not. So, you know, it's not that all of Krishna's devotees have to be renunciates living in the mountain. Because to be a devotee of Krishna means to act according to Krishna's will. So if Krishna wants you to float around in 25 mansions around space, then that's what you can do. And if he wants you to live in a little hut in Navadvip, that's what you can do. You know? That's why most of the devotees, like the Pandavas, they were Kshatriyas, they weren't even renunciates. And if you read all these stories in the Bhagavatam, it looked like they were living a pretty materialistic life. They had a palace, they had servants, they had elephants, they had this, they had money, they had gold. But the thing is, they never forgot Krishna. So that is the important thing, that one develops Krishna consciousness. And that's just like the criticism of devotees. Sometimes people say, oh, they've got big houses, they've got cars, they've got this, they've got that, they've got this, that. Therefore, how can they be spiritual? Same criticism is there. What's spiritual about all that? But what's spiritual about it is that it's all been used to satisfy Krishna's desires. You see? So therefore, when one time Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sangha was challenged that why devotees are using this, that, 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 and Prabhupada also used to give the same answer many times. He said, actually the devotees are the only ones who should be allowed these things. You see? If you say, why did Kadama Muni have this mansion, and he's the only one that should be allowed to do that. Because he's a devotee. Therefore he wasn't entangled. You see? But if you'd have given the same thing, let's say to some mundane kami, then definitely, what would be the use of it? He would just become more and more entangled and go to hell. But you don't read the Kadama Muni went to hell. Actually, he was able to give it all up and go back to God. So therefore, he was definitely a very powerful devotee. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahaprabhu and Pijaya.